Hello and welcome to Sap Chat. I'm your host, Jaron Main. Now, this is episode two of a four episode series with Justin Sutton Parker on sustainability. Justin is an information technology professional with 25 years' experience and an MBA in sustainability and a PhD doctorate. He is a researcher for computer and urban science with the University of Warwick and the Warwick Business School. Justin, welcome to Sap Chat.
Thank you.
So in episode one, we talked about why bother. We talked about the context of what's going on, the pressures on organisations and why they should start to look at it. In this episode, episode two, I'd like to look more about what can actually organisations do about it? Because often, you know, if they're saying why bother and they get their head around, well, OK, it's right to do it. It's like, where do people start and what can they can actually practically do? I'd like to try to get some sort of understanding of that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach. You can easily overcomplicate this. So my field is obviously computer science, urban science, and also within that, industrial ecology. And when you start looking at carbon footprints, information, everything else, it can be really overwhelming for people. And they quite often say to me, I just don't know where to start. And I always say, look, let's take a step back. The easiest thing to do is basically adopt four very simple steps, and then you will achieve sustainable IT. So the first one that I always talk about is low carbon footprint device selection and use. So that is exactly what it sounds like. Choosing laptops, notebooks, etc. for your workforce or for yourself that's got the lowest carbon footprint, and as you move forward through the years, you're basically using the least amount of energy after it's already been manufactured. The other thing is, and this is really simple, and people often don't think about this. If you buy a device, you ought really to keep it for as long as you can. So it's longer device lifespans to reduce waste. And also that reduces demand, because if you're keeping a device for 8 years instead of five, you're not rushing out and buying another device at year five. And obviously, as the embodied emissions of producing a device make 75% of the carbon footprint of most IT equipment, really, if you keep it longer, you're pushing demand out. It's called displacement. So try and keep them as long as you can. That's a really simple one to do. The other thing is selecting efficient low carbon data centers. Now, anyone who's ever worked in this space, there are data centers, then there are data centers. What do I mean by that? So there can be a data center full of servers using loads of electricity. And there's also data centers that are actually really well managed, really efficient, and basically they will be using electricity too, but they'll be using less electricity per compute byte. So basically what they're doing is much more efficient. But the other side of it is they'll also either be investing in renewable energy, or they will actually be using renewable energy. So the point of this being, and this is a really simple one, standard electricity, if it's produced by coal, as an example, has a really high carbon intensity within it. But obviously electricity produced by, say, you know, wind or solar or whatever, has a really low carbon intensity. So the point is, if a data center is being run by low carbon intensity electricity, you're causing less emissions. So the next time you think about, I need to go to a data center or a cloud data center, actually look at that criteria around what that sustainability is, around things like power usage effectiveness and carbon usage effectiveness. And that will give you a green criteria of how to actually achieve less emissions. Now, the other one, lots of people don't actually ever associate this with IT, which I find quite bizarre, but remote working. Real standard one. You can't remote work if you haven't got an IT solution allowing you to remote work. How would you do that?
Yeah.
So it is actually an IT associated carbon footprint and also sustainability strategy. So the point about remote working is really simple. You're not going into work, therefore you're not commuting, therefore you're not causing scope three commuting emissions, and you're lowering that down. So that's a really important focus. So I've said these four simple steps. The point being is, where do I start? So the easiest way to start is start by trying to understand what is the carbon footprint of your IT. So we can do that through a lot of my research works out how to do this with ease. You mentioned earlier that I'm the CEO of PX3. We have applications and services that do all of that. So you can look at carbon footprint. There's another way of doing it as well. We're actually launching in about a week's time a free application online. So you could say, if you want to look at the carbon footprint of all of your end user computing devices, you know, you put in, I've got 1,000 laptops, 50 tablets and so on, you know, all the way through to monitors, thin clients, everything else. And that application basically says, you know, how long do you keep your notebooks? We normally keep them 4 years. How long do you keep your tablets and so on? You just fill out, it takes about literally 2 minutes. And then it tells you what your carbon footprint is based on scientific data. It's the most likely average of what your carbon footprint is of that end user computing estate. So that gives you that. The reason we make it free of charge, the reason we want this to be out there, is it gives people that kind of toe in the water effect where they can actually see what it looks like, see what it is. And we put what we call a tangible analogy in there too. And it says, do you know what, all of these emissions that you're creating, that would require X amount of trees to sequester that pollution every year. So it kind of makes you sit and think well, I don't really know what GHG emissions means. And, you know, thousands of tons there, you know, what does that actually mean? But when you see it as you need this amount of trees to actually offset that amount of carbon, it makes people sit up and think, oh, right, that's important then, so I'll do something about it. So the second step is, if you imagine you want to buy a low carbon footprint device, you would think you would just go and download a carbon footprint report from a manufacturer site, look at it, and it says, there we go, 200 kilograms of CO2e, which is the measurement of GHG emissions. I'll get another report, I download that, I look and say, oh, that one's 205. So that one's obviously better than that one, and so on. You go through the process. You think that's pretty easy. It's not. The reason being, product carbon footprints, whilst they do actually follow ISO standards to be produced, the problem is with the scope 2 emissions, which is electricity consumed. One company might only add in a year's worth of scope 2 emissions in that carbon footprint report, whereas another company might be including 6 years. The other point, we talked about carbon intensity of electricity grids. This company over here might be using the GHG carbon factor conversion of Europe, and that is actually quite low carbon intensity, whereas this report might be using the one for the USA or Australia or something, and that's actually very high carbon intensity. So the point being is, these carbon footprint reports that you have in front of you are not comparable, because they're not actually based on the same data. That's got 1 year in, that's got 6 years in. So you then then become highly confused. So the point being is, I'd spent many, many years researching this and fixed the problem. So I invented a tool called the Dynamic Carbon Footprint application. It's online, you can use it, anybody can use it. You log in, and basically you go through, if you imagine if you're a procurement person, you click the button that says, I want to look at some notebooks today. I normally keep those notebooks for 5 years because that's our company policy. And do you know what, we work in the UK. I mean, you can set it so that we work in Europe, work globally, or any country in the world.
Right, yep.
What it does, it takes that data and it basically harmonizes all the data across all of the manufacturers. So what you do, when you press apply, you get a list of all of the laptops that are available on the market today, and it's stack ranked by carbon footprint. So you can go through, there's lots of other data, contextual data around, you know, eco label status, everything like that.
Right.
But you can just go through and you compare it like you would on any website. You can compare the ones you want, and then you can go through and print off a specific carbon footprint report, which is actually specific to not only that product, but where you are, where you'll be working, how long you'll keep it for. And the importance of that is, there's lots of legislation out there currently which says, you know, I need to know exactly what your device is going to cause as a carbon footprint specifically in this country. So say if somebody in a particular country is like a local authority or something's doing it, that needs to be specified for that country. So that's really helpful. That tool is out there that can be used. So that's the kind of the second step on the journey, which makes it really easy. The third step on the journey is just making sure that those things are recognized within the business as making an impact. So we talked about in the first episode is, yes, you can tick the compliance box because you're saying, absolutely, we've bought these products because they contribute to our net zero strategies, they're lowering emissions and everything else. But I did a piece of research about 3 years ago, which looked into the psyche of almost stages through a business where you've got, obviously you've got the board level. So they will be subject to mandatory GHG emissions reporting. So they will be interested in sustainable IT because that helps lower the GHG impression. The second point is that then you've got managers that have been given KPIs around this type of thing. They may be less interested because the KPI might be different around this. But the point is everyone becomes interested if you can actually spell it out that says, it's the thing that came out of this research. The biggest barrier was most people looked at it and said, I can't do sustainable IT. Why can't you do it? Because it takes too much time to work it out. Right, we've just proven that with all these tools, doesn't take lots of time to work it out. But the other thing is, it costs too much, which is complete nonsense. So the point is, when you go to sustainable IT, think about it really simply. If you're keeping devices longer, you're actually saving money on procurement because you're not buying devices every 5 years, you're buying them every 8 years or whatever you choose it to be. The other point is, if you're not using so much electricity, you're saving a fortune by not using so much electricity. And the point with sustainable IT is it's actually self-funding. So the more you adopt it. So going back to, does it appeal to people and what's the easiest step? If you can quantify that, which we have actually have an application at PX3, which quantifies not only the planet impact, but it quantifies the profit impact as well. If you can quantify that and say to somebody, well, actually, no, it's going to save you £1.5 million over 3 years. The point I'm making is if someone, say it's a CFO, and sorry to CFOs if I'm positioning it in this way, CFO side of it, you know, they're obviously KPI'd on, they must save money for the company. So if you're appealing to someone's role-based interests and needs, saying, you know, forget your impression or thoughts about climate change, if I can actually save you £1 million by adopting sustainable IT, is that of interest? Of course it's of interest, because it's, you know, it's almost a no-brainer. And I've got a great example of that. Nordic Choice Hotels, I did a piece of research for them. They were going to replace 4,000 laptops because they'd basically been hit with a malware virus. And we said, you know, why don't you just stop that a minute? You might be able to actually basically re-image those laptops with Chrome OS, keep them and carry on working. So we proved that would be the point. We also proved that that would prevent 1.5 million kilograms of GHG emissions by not throwing those devices away and buying new devices, which was a real bonus. But the one thing when talking to the CEO, I pointed out as well, that will also save you £5 million. So they've got the absolute bonus of contributing to basically, you know, driving climate action by responsible consumption, which are, you know, two of the UN SDGs, but also, you know, let's face it, saving an absolute fortune. So when you balance these things out, they're the things that you can do about it. So just to recap, adopt the four simple steps: low carbon footprint device selection and use. We've got tools for that. You can do that. Longer device lifespans to reduce waste, select green data centers, and then put remote working. If you're coming in less to work, you're obviously causing less scope 3 emissions.
And I think wrap all the way around that is the transparency of data and being able to look like we like, because that clearly has been a challenge in some of the tools that you've been talking about. Dynamic carbon footprint tool allows organizations to get that transparency they really need.
Yeah, I always use the word transparency is really good. I always use the word parity. The reason being, you know, if you're not comparing apples for apples, you might as well not bother. You need to actually look at it and say, right, I've now got the data in front of me. I can make a really well-informed decision. And know that actually that is an effectual decision which will produce a successful result. So the idea is to reduce GHG emissions, and that kind of proves it.
And where can our listeners and viewers find the access to these tools? Which site are they based on?
So there's links on the PX3 website. So there's links for those in the services section. So if you go to px3.org.uk, there's various different links for those tools. And as I said, you can access those and use them. If companies are looking for the, you know, the sort of complex consulting where we look at the, you know, price savings with exactly on your IT, then that is a consultative interaction working with the team. But there are the online tools which you can use.
Justin, thank you very much. It's been really informative. I think it's given our listeners and viewers a much better idea of how to go about this, which is exactly what we wanted to do. And so thanks for joining me for the second episode, and I look forward to you joining me in the third episode of this four episode
Look
series.
forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks, Justin.